Chapter 12. Life and Plant Life. Scrackles chirped in the trees soon after the sounds of sloshing that accompanied the movements of Cooley's big legs in the water and the dull thumping of his feet ceased to resound. With the slow lowering sensation accompanying the Tortanga coming to rest, Maqua awoke. The rain was gone, as were the thunder and flashes of lightning. He emerged from the tent, walked through the array of passenger benches, and spotted Tuljapa unbuckling his harness. Tuljapa removed the lid from the smoldering coals in the fire basin.
Want some help? You look tired.
I would appreciate it. Will you take down the lamps and fill them? Also, if you're going to be awake for a while, please keep an eye out for Fazugas. An hour back, I heard them. Wake us if they've come close.
Maqua blinked at the man.
Sure. But what do they sound like?
Tuljapa held up both hands, claws out and wriggling.
They screech. You'll know it.
Maqua thought about the night before, and Shimna's shuddering. He nodded and sat, looking at the fire basin for a moment before he got to work. He heard a murmur in the tent and looked through the cover on the benches and down the big hallway to see Tuljapa pull back a flap inside the big dwelling and reveal a small private room. The flap fell back, and Tuljapa vanished inside. Maqua couldn't help but smile and guess that the man's job was thankless work, and he deserved his rest. Soon he had the lamps out and set aside to cool. He sat and looked around at the scenery. As Scrackles set about making a chorus of racket, he glanced back at the tent and imagined someone trying to sleep through it. He looked around at the trees and spotted one of the noisy creatures leaping from branch to branch. As it went on its way, it came to a tree that was encased in yellow vines that had a sinister look to them. No sooner had it touched the vines than it started shrieking, struggling about as though stuck and tangled in many smaller vines that came out like feelers from the main vine. After a minute or two, the little creature ceased its struggling and breathed its last. Maqua watched the vine, inspecting it, and spied small bits of fur elsewhere on it in nooks and crannies. There were lumps in it that looked about the size of a small animal.
It's a Thorlak vine.
He hissed as he jumped, only understanding the words a moment after. Shimna giggled at his surprise.
Sorry, Maqua. I did not mean to sneak up on you.
He snorted and reached to ruffle her ears as Saruth had done to his many times. She leaned in and touched noses with him, laughed, and then ran a few feet before jumping off the edge of Cooley's shell and falling out of sight. There was a little thump. He went to peer over the edge of the shell down at Shimna, who was on the ground 7 feet below. His eyes widened as he got his first look at the Tortanga's huge feet that were tucked up against the sides of the shell, with fat claws poking outward. Shimna waved to invite him down and called in the loudest possible whisper,
"Come, Maqua, I'll show you about the plants.
He held up a finger, and then went to don his armor and boots. He grabbed his spear as a last-minute decision before returning to the edge of the shell. He hung over it and fell to the ground to land in a crouch with almost no sound.
You move quietly. You could become a very good hunter.
He glanced back at her and grinned.
People who were thieves do that.
They walked around coolly, and Maqua got his first look at the animal's head. The beaked face of the black creature was holed up within its shell, and his nostrils opened to let air in as he took slow, deep breaths.
Do you want to say hello to Cooley?
One look at the huge beak of the creature was enough.
No. If he's in a bad mood, I'd be a snack.
Shimna giggled.
Maqua, he doesn't eat people, only bugs, plants, and fish.
She held her hands together at the palms and spread her fingers apart.
It's like a big net when he eats. The water goes through, he gathers his food, and when he gets enough, he swallows.
Maqua scratched his head.
How does he not drown?
She rolled her eyes and pointed to huge slits in the sides of his head that were almost invisible since it was pulled back.
Like a fish does.
Maqua stepped closer and sniffed at the animal. The Tortanga smelled of swamp water, clean but very wild. He noted that Cooley had a powerful presence indeed, and that anyone who would face this creature in battle would surely be crushed.
I guess Regenta doesn't need to worry about being attacked by enemies, does it?
Shimna gave a slow, thoughtful blink and looked from Cooley to Maqua.
What makes you ask something like that? We don't have any enemies, Maqua.
He shook his head and thought about Saruth and his mission to warn other nations about those big flying things that drop fire. So what if they could burn things down? He imagined that it would take a huge number of troops to conquer a nation, and many more to conquer one such as Regenta.
Siruth worries for your people. After seeing this, I don't as much anymore.
She nodded, and then waved a hand in silent invitation to follow her as she stepped away. They walked around in a large circular path, and stopped once in a while to make sure they could still see Cooley's big black shell with the tents atop it. Shimna showed him many plants, explaining the uses and dangers of each. While it felt somewhat like a walking case of relived history, Makwa found himself fascinated not only by the vastness of Shimna's knowledge on the subject, but the sheer wonder of the value of the plants in the swamp. Some were used for meals, many of which she had shown him before, and he knew better than to taste this time. Some were made into drinks and potions to cure illnesses. One of them was something Makwa recognized from the Museum of Regenta, as the plant with pods that could be chewed to clean teeth. Shimna offered Makwa a pod. He tried it. The fresh taste was wonderful in his mouth, and the brush-like surface of the pod scrubbed against his teeth while he chewed.
That one is a viwa.
She plucked another pod and popped it into her mouth before looking around. Her face scrunched up for a moment, and she closed one eye, chomping on it.
This one is too strong.
She turned and spit it out. While she did, he noticed a stand of cane nearby.
What's this one?
He walked over to push it and found it very heavy for its size. She came closer.
Oh, that one is water cane. Let me borrow your spear. What for?
She snorted and held out a hand to him, palm up. He rolled his eyes.
Fine.
He handed it over. She jammed the tip into one of the larger pieces of cane and pulled back. A stream of clear water poured out of it.
You can drink it. Thirsty?
She offered him a smile. He knelt, cupping one of his hands under the small flow, and gathered some. He drew it to his lips, took a cautious lick, and then blinked. It was sweet and very refreshing, and he moved to let the pouring water descend into his open mouth. It was a vast improvement over the barrels of water they kept in the tent on Cooley. The water from them always tasted like old wood. As he drank his fill, he watched out of the corner of his eye. Shimna poked another one and began getting her own drink. Once quenched, he sat back and relaxed on a patch of grass.
That is wonderful.
Shimna grinned and took some mud in her hands. She formed it into a ball and patted it over the holes to keep the rest of the liquid in the plants. Makwa perked his ears at her and growled a curious note.
We waste not, so we want not. And you can take a lot of that water and boil it down to get this syrup that's really sweet and good on any bread.
As someone who had been a baker, he wanted to do it.
I'd like to try that sometime.
She smiled and licked her nose.
I'll ask my daddy about it.
There were other plants, many of which Makwa found rather dull, but for the fact that Shimna was explaining them to him. One of them had a huge, colorful fan-like flower that she said bloomed 3 seasons of the year and had little round purple fruit growing on it. On tasting the fruit, Makwa thought his tongue might curl back into his brain. Shimna chuckled at the puckered face he was making.
That's a Zeppo. It isn't the best thing alone if you don't like sour stuff, but it makes fish tender enough to melt on your tongue, and the sour turns salty when it's cooked.
Another plant she pointed out was a Regenta vine that grew on the side of a tree. Without its flowers in bloom, he never would have guessed that's what it was.
I wish I could see one in bloom.
Shimna smiled.
There may still be some at home for you to see.
There were grasses that she said could be bundled together to make shelters or rafts, as well as trees that grew large, prickly pods on them that she called dimsy trees.
These pods on the dimsy can be used to make lamps burn. Inside they grow a thick sap that burns slowly over much time in a fire. In my city there are whole platforms that have nothing but these trees so that we never run out of oil.
Makwa glanced around and flicked his tail as he realized that he didn't see Cooley anywhere. Shimna blinked.
What is it? Do you smell something?
I think we're lost.
Shimna laughed and wagged a finger at him.
No, Makwa, we are not lost. Watch, and I will show you how to find our way.
She pointed to his booted foot and then pointed one step back, showing where he had stepped. She began walking, pointing to each footprint as they went, some of them in places Makwa had difficulty seeing any sign of passage at all. He made sure to watch where she was pointing and was so intent on it that he looked up after a little while and found he was standing in front of Cooley. He yipped and jumped back as the animal's huge, sleepy visage filled his view. Shimna burst into a fit of giggles. That was when he caught the smell. Someone nearby had food, and it smelled so good that it grabbed him by the nose. He glanced at Shimna and saw her lick her lips. They shared a nod, climbed a tree, and then swung onto Cooley's shell. Saruth was awake on the other side of the tent.
I see you've been out making mischief.
He gave Makwa a wink. Makwa snorted, as was his custom when dealing with most of Saruth's amiable humor, and stuck his tongue out at him. Shimna saw it and did the same.
Nyeh, Makwa was safe. Makwa was with me.
She said it like she was 10 foot tall and spear-proof.
I'm certain he was in good hands. Would you like a taste of this?
He held up the fruit he had prepared.
No. We had some small fruit earlier, and I don't want any more fruit.
Shimna turned up her nose. Makwa snorted and put a hand on set upturned nose.
Yes, she does.
He glanced over at her.
Trust me. You really do.
Her ears lay back, and she grabbed his arm, then made as if to bite his fingers, but instead smirked and shook her head.
No.
He scowled.
Okay, so you can know about things, but I can't? I'm right about this, just like you're right about the plant, Shimna. At least try it.
She glowered at Makwa.
Fine.
She turned and looked at Saruth with a sweet smile.
Yes, I'd like some, please.
You seem persuasive as always, young Makwa, like a mallet.
Saruth grinned at Makwa and passed over two pieces on sticks. Makwa glared at Saruth and was about to say something when Saruth pointed at Shimna. He turned and watched her take a bite.
Well?
She snorted at him as she chewed, and then her green eyes showed delight, and she was quick to take a second bite that was followed by a third, much larger bite.
See? I told you I knew better about that. Maybe next time you won't be so stubborn.
He waggled a finger at her. Shimna finished chewing a huge bite and turned to growl in Makwa's general direction, her tail lashing behind her as a grin surfaced that promised more mischief than menace in retribution. The children each had 3 large pieces of fruit. They watched in anticipation as Saruth seasoned it, and then flipped it in the pan over the fire. He showed them how to cook it, and how to tell when it was done. When ready, the sugary juice bubbled and it was golden brown. Soon the others woke, and many of the travelers came to see about breakfast, which Saruth was gracious enough to provide. Even Lady Elita de Roth came and asked Saruth if she might have some, her eyes downcast as she licked her lips. Saruth sent Makwa to get many small lengths of water cane, and on his return began to make skewers with them to pass out with pieces of fruit upon them. Everyone enjoyed a delightful breakfast.